everybody has great cameras.
Yes.
We were at a whole different level, as you know, of people being able to create content.
Yeah.
Video content.
Yeah, yeah. Velkommen alle sammen til Fotopodden. Der Thomas Brun heter jeg som stepper inn for Erik som på ferie I dag. Og det jo en litt kul episode I dag fordi vi har besøk fra USA for å snakke om portrettfotografering, bruke videolys til portretter og utvikle seg også I videos fra foto til video. Og vi har med Walter Van Dusen. Welcome!
Welcome! Hei hei!
From where in America are you from?
Originally?
Yes.
Las Vegas, Nevada.
Yes.
I was born, and my Dutch grandmother raised me in Dutch, which I don't speak anymore.
No.
Until I was about 4 and a half.
That's pretty cool.
Yes. Yeah. So I always had an interesting accent.
Yeah.
Even when I was in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
And everybody would ask me, are you from Boston? Everybody.
Yeah.
Are you from Boston? So when I left high school in 84, I'm not young. 1984, I joined the Navy.
Yep.
I was supposed to be a Navy SEAL. I was really in shape. And the eyesight while I was, from the time I got accepted to go to Navy, they call it BUD, Navy SEAL school,
yeah.
my eyesight passed the threshold. Right. So while I was in boot camp and then all the other additional things, they constantly did eye exams. Because your eyes can't be below a certain strength. Yes. So they said, you can't be a Navy SEAL, which made me upset. So right. I said, what's the next best thing? They said, submarines.
Right.
So I said, okay, I'll do submarines. So I went from Orlando, Florida, up to Groton, Connecticut,
yes.
which is outside of Boston. While I was in sub school and weapon school and all that stuff, I went to go visit my aunt in Boston, and nobody asked me where I was from.
Exactly.
Nobody did.
Right.
I'm like, So that was roughly 1984. So 4 years later, 1988, I got lucky. I found out about someplace you would never find out about, Department of Corrections. So in my uniform, before I got out of the Navy, I went for an interview. And they're like, okay. Because in the Navy, I had to have a top secret clearance.
Yes.
So, and then... In the Navy, on a submarine, it's very black and white. In corrections, it's supposed to be black and white, but it's more gray. Mm-hmm. You can't be so strict. But on a submarine, it was move this glass, very precise.
Right.
So I got accepted for that, but I couldn't go to the corrections until, like, say, 6 months later. So on Friday, I started working at a nuclear power plant. So from there, I went to the corrections. I did that for 20 years, maximum security. Always did photography, even in high school. I was like, and then in a submarine, whenever we went to port, I would take pictures. I ended up going to periscope photography school, which is normally for only officers. So I love that. And then my daughter was born. So I became a dad with the camera. And then some random conference happened. I went to this and I went, oh.
Yeah.
This looks pretty fun.
Yeah.
So while in corrections, I started doing photography. And then I'm a people person. So I photographed my cousin's wedding. I'm like, this is pretty cool.
Mm.
So I started doing wedding photography. And then when you do low-end wedding photography, you have no respect. So people gave me a hard time. So I didn't like that. So then I stopped getting paid by myself. So for 1 year, I worked under three different types of photographers where I still got paid, but not a lot. One was a photojournalist, one was very hands-on, and the other one was mix.
Mm.
So for the portrait traditional person, I would only do is basically switch film days.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I would switch the film backs for the Hasselblad. And then the other person was a PJ, and they let me do some stuff. And then the other one was a high-end PJ, and then she let me shoot some black and white film. And then what I would do is when they got the film back, I would, wherever they were, I drove and looked at the pictures. So digital is instantaneous, but
yeah, yeah, yeah.
I didn't know how. So they would let me look at the pictures and I got good enough for the high-end PJ photojournalism photographer that she let me do some groom stuff. Mm-hmm. Like she gave me film and shot the grooms. And then I got good enough and she, the big break I had, it was a super high-end wedding outside Boston and she couldn't do it. And that was my first high-end wedding. And in the wedding world, people don't hire you unless you have a portfolio.
Yeah.
And once you can do one high-end wedding and you can show it, then other high-end weddings
opens
follow.
Up, yeah.
So the only reason why I got it was because, her name is Tammy.
Yeah.
She let me do this Marblehead Mass.
Yeah.
Super high-end. And I had that as my portfolio and she let me use the photos. And then from there, I became a high-end photographer because I still worked in corrections. Mm. So I didn't need the money. I had a full-time
job.
You
can be picky.
Yeah. So before I would just do anybody. And I realized when you do low end, you know, when you
low end. That's what people see you as, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you don't get the respect. And people think if, when you start doing expensive weddings that you get they would be hard, but they're not because they let you do your job.
Yeah.
Basically, the higher end the wedding, the less they want you to, they just want you to do it.
Yeah.
The lower end.
Hands on, yeah.
Like, geez. And then in corrections, it's a very negative place. Even the staff are negative. Inmates, it's a very negative place. So I would have my outlet. I would go to do weddings all jacked up and happy. So I could be at a really... at a wedding on a Saturday or Friday. Then Monday I can be in the mental health unit, not having a good time or the restricted house. So I had the contrast from the happiest people are at a wedding to the, in your prison. Prison is in the United States, in Connecticut, because that's where I went. Prison is the discipline.
Yeah.
You're not there to do anything other than maintain security and fair affirming. Basically, prison is the penalty. You don't need to add on to it.
Yeah.
Other prisons in the United States, they feel like they have to add additional pain and suffering. But in Connecticut and Northeast, it's your time away.
Mm.
So very negative, but I would come in all excited because I just did a wedding. And then my coworkers, they weren't happy with me because misery deserves company, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So I'm coming in all jacked up.
Yeah.
So I did 20 years in 1 second. I could not... I only did corrections because I got a full-time retirement. Unlike Norway,
yes,
there's no health care.
No.
So I have, by doing 20 years in corrections, I got health care till I die. So I basically have a Norwegian health care system because I have it for me and my daughter and my wife.
Mm.
So, and then weddings, then I started doing some family photos. And then I did First Wave Digital. Back in 2001, when Canon came out with the digital, they had the first one, I think it was a D10 or 10, whatever it was, wasn't good enough. But the 20D or the 20, whatever it is, 20D or D20. And once that was good enough, 2001, I was one of the first all digital wedding photographers in the United States.
Yeah.
And really? Then back then, there was no workflow.
No.
Nope. None. There was no RAW. We had RAW, but how do you process it?
Exactly.
So you had to, back in the day, you had to photograph like you're doing slide film. You remember slides? So you have the regular film, then you have slide film, which is basically an opposite.
Yeah.
So the slide itself is the picture, and you put it in a machine and it projects.
Yeah, I remember those.
Okay.
Yeah.
And a negative is the opposite, so you have to put it to a projector and print it.
Yeah.
So with digital JPEG... What is it, 5 megapixels?
Yeah.
You had you had a very small amount of, what do they call it now? Dynamic range.
Yeah.
So you have to get it spot on back in the day. So that helped me out through longer. Then I started doing portraits. I would film. Well, I did portraits before the digital, but yeah, I got lucky. I got to learn from the film masters, which they're no longer there.
Mm.
Shot medium format. So back in the day, it used to be Hasselblad, Rolleiflex, or Mamiya. Mamiya was like a 6x7 negative. Hasselblad and Rolleiflex had they were square, And the thing was, everybody wanted to be Hasselblad, but Hasselblad had a little plate in the back to remove the film, and then Rolleiflex had it built in. So all my buddies had Hasselblads, but I'm like, for the same price, why don't I just go with Rolleiflex?
Exactly.
Nobody else had them, same lenses. But I think film got me a good foundation, and now people are like wanting to start shooting film for, you know, for nostalgia.
And nostalgia, yeah, just for fun.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But I would never go backwards.
And but it's a good discipline to bring with you, though, isn't it?
Well, I had the mindset.
Yes.
And but it's what's funny is film is the opposite of digital. With digital, you have to worry about the highlights. With film, you have to worry about the shadows or underexposing.
Yeah.
With digital, you have to worry about overexposing. So it was sort of funny with that. But if you ever shot, used slide film, you had to be right in the spot.
Yeah.
So if you use, it's very expensive and you had to be right in the money. But film is fun. Posing, I got to learn from the posing masters. Mm. So having that foundation, I thought was really helpful. And back in the day, there was no YouTube.
No.
You had, everything was in person.
You had to figure it out.
Yeah, yeah, or in person.
Yeah.
And there was like master photographers that knew how to pose. So I got lucky, I got to learn from them.
Well, also the fact that you're just curious about it and you want to learn, right? It's like if you, it's like luck is, what's it, opportunity in disguise, isn't it? It's like you seek out.
Like if you went to a country to go surfing,
yeah,
and you were not looking for anything besides great waves,
yeah,
and then you stumble upon somebody that you didn't know was there.
Exactly.
And they become amazing.
Yeah.
How else? That's luck. Your luck was that you knew how to ski, surf,
yeah,
and you know how to, you went to travel. But
you put yourself in situations where the luck appears, right?
Yeah. Luck happened. You have to have luck. Luck has to have doors.
Yeah, exactly.
And if you don't go through the door, you won't know what's on the other side.
Exactly.
We're on the same page?
I understand, yeah.
I like that.
No, it's very important. But also, yeah, that discipline that you bring with you, also now to the digital, where it is easier and there's a lot more you can do in post-production and stuff like that, but you still have to be on point when you take the photo as much as, well, not like, maybe not as much, but...
Well, like you saw today.
Yeah.
So
I did a workshop with a bunch of people.
So what my analogy is this, and it's the farther away the person is, the more you have to rely on that person to be amazing.
Yeah.
And normally with... If you have professional models that know where the light is, they're doing all the hard work and you just have to take pictures and maybe do a little bit. As the person gets closer and closer and closer, and you saw it today, it's, oh, now what do I do? Hmm. Now they're in your face. It's almost like if you have a conversation, we're 1.5 meters away maybe.
Yeah.
So, but if you get closer, now you have to worry about how's the person's breath? Does the person shower?
Exactly, yeah.
So the closer you are, the more you have to worry about, right?
Yes.
Now you're like reaching for the breath mints. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to have bad breath. So, and then what you do is the biggest thing, your life is a journey, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in corrections, I had to be aware of what's not supposed to be there.
Yeah.
So, and in the Navy, I had to learn how to have systems, like very specific systems. Yeah. In corrections, I had to look for people that weren't doing the right thing. Example, which could be petty, but women have hair ties.
Yeah.
Now, in the prison, you can't have jewelry. You can't have anything on your wrist. And what people do is little infractions, what they can get away with. So they would have the black on the wrist. And I would just look in a chow hall. And I see, and in the prison, IDs have to be on the upper left. So everything is, the only thing that's different in the prison is you.
Yeah.
Their day is 24/7. And the only thing that's different is the staff. And if you're there for 20, 30 years, how are you going to keep yourself occupied?
Exactly.
So I got the reputation that the IDs are on the left, nothing on the wrist. And all I do is just watch the line. And then after a few times, like, you know, having the black thing, the little tie band, or also when people come in, they're supposed to sit, it's supposed to be in order. So fill in your seats. So my game which could go to wedding photography, which you like this, it's going to be a good transition. Mm-hmm. So I would watch people and I would see, oh, okay. So this person, I worked in a men's and women's prison.
All right.
So this person would walk in and then I would notice that this person's not done eating yet, but they're going to get up. And with this person that's supposed to sit way over there is now going to try to sit next to their friend.
Yeah.
So I would watch that. Now, the same token, a little flower girl at a wedding.
Yeah,
she sees the bride, right? So I see her, and she has her little bouquet. So I see her, like, seeing the beautiful bride, and I see that she wants to show her pretty bouquet, right? So I watch that, and I see her walking towards the bride, and I see her tapping, and what am I doing?
Getting a camera ready.
Right? Anticipating the moment.
Yeah.
So in corrections, I would do the same then.
Yeah.
So I practiced wedding photography while I was in the chow hall at a maximum security prison. So I would see that. And that made me more aware at weddings that I saw her or the little ring bearer or the father about to come in and I see them, you know, balling up and I'm like. Yeah. So it's all in weddings, it's all about being prepared. You have to be ready before it happens.
Exactly.
And another cross-reference to corrections is when you first get to the prison, everything's overwhelming. The noise. You can't see anything.
Mm.
You know what I mean? It's like if you ever been to a nightclub and it's loud and crowded and you're like, where am I focusing?
A couple of years ago now, but yeah, I remember it. Yeah.
Giddy up. But the point is.
Yeah.
And then, but if you knew somebody at the nightclub.
Yeah.
Like you saw your friends.
Yeah.
Then all the noise goes away, right?
Exactly.
Then you know to go over there. So the thing that they said was when you first get to the prison, you won't be able to focus on what you need to focus on. But the more time you get there, the more you can get rid of the ambient noise, the white noise. But if you hear something like your mama, you know, anything that you have to anticipate that we don't have weapons inside. I had weapons on the outside, but on the inside, no weapons. So the thing you want to, it's like a bouncer.
Yeah.
A bouncer, their job is to prevent, like somebody starts getting wild.
Keep the calm as well.
Out.
Yeah.
So that transition to weddings.
Yeah.
I look for moments that are about to develop. Sometimes they happen, but most times they did. And you got the reference about the little flower that actually happened. And then portraits. And then when I saw you in 2016 or 17, whatever it was, or whatever, when I saw you the first time. Which I forgot.
I think it's 2019.
Yeah. So I came to do some weddings.
Yeah.
And, but I was doing also with weddings, you're not in control. To me, weddings are the easiest you can do in photography because the story's already there.
Yeah. Yeah.
You don't have to tell a story.
You have to look for it, but yeah.
Yeah. Story's there. And then occasionally you might have to do some family photos.
Mm-hmm.
Occasionally, if you want to keep people happy. You want to do some scene setters. So I always said weddings, you can be a portrait photographer, commercial photographer, psychiatrist.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Everything at a wedding. But then when you start doing family photos, you know, dynamics, which family photos and wedding family photos are the same. But then with headshots, which is what I love doing now for the past couple of years, there's no reason for them to be there.
No.
None. Why are they there? There's no reason. So now you have to like, and my little gig was, I hate flash because flash is distracting and people start blinking and stuff like that. So as soon as digital mirrorless came out, I'm like, and I always use constant lighting.
Yeah.
Even when I did weddings. So with constant lighting and headshots, the one thing I always look for is small little pupils.
Mm.
And if you look back in the old days with flash, huge pupils.
Yeah.
And then you have to, in Photoshop, take the pupil and make it smaller, which distorts the eye. But with constant lighting, your pupil is really small, especially if they have a light-colored eye. As soon as they walk in, I'm like, even when I'm demonstrating, like, the pupil's small and all you see is these big blue, green eyes.
Yeah. Brings out the eyes a bit more, right? Yeah.
All.
Yeah.
And then what happens is very close, and then if you pay attention. So right now, Thomas has a black undershirt on. So if I was taking Thomas's portrait, I would fix that.
Yes.
You know what I mean? I would look at Thomas, and if I saw his glasses are like this, you know, before I even touch, they're not. They're good. So with the headshot, constant light, close up. I don't even touch the camera until I give it the distractions.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you notice the distractions, which I sort of talked about at the beginning of today's seminar, which I had a few people come up, and if they, I messed them up a little bit so I can, you know, if you're aware of the distractions and then they're gone and then all you see is the eyes, that's when I start thinking about taking the picture. And this is within seconds.
Yeah.
Obviously, I have a long history of looking for distractions. And most people, once again, back to corrections, right? You're new to photography. Everything's overwhelming. You got people in line wanting their headshots. You're not going to see the distractions. You're going to see, you're going to be overwhelmed, right? And then what happens is they don't even talk. They take pictures and they don't, you look at them and they're, you know, little changes could have been easy. And if you're using flash, now you're also behind, you're doing this.
Yeah.
And then you're looking at the pictures. And then you're not, no engagement, right? So for my headshots, I have it on a tripod. I have a remote control, if it's working correctly. Yeah. And normally I'm off to the side, and I'm looking for the distractions. And then I just go, look at the top of my lens, turn your face this way. Not touching the camera, autofocus.
Yeah.
And then, oh, I'm all done.
Yeah. You can also be silent as well. So
yeah, yeah.
They don't really know when the photo's being taken.
Because I just basically, most people, it's like going to the dentist, right? You're waiting, you have dentist in Norway. Right?
Yes.
You don't have, it's not part of your healthcare, but you have to pay for it.
Yeah, I know.
But you know, the dentist normally goes, does your cheek and puts the Novocaine in, right? To distract you. Me talking and just doing this, and then done.
Yeah.
And I always, you know, it's always done.
But that's the difference between taking photos of just normal people and models, right? Because with models, like you said, like they kind of know with the flash and they hear the camera click and everything. And they maybe prefer to hear the camera when the photo's being taken because they know to switch the pose.
Yes.
But with normal people, it's a bit different sometimes, I guess. And also now people are so used to the iPhone that doesn't make a sound when you take a photo.
Yeah, everybody has a mirrorless camera.
Yeah, exactly.
And everybody is used to that. I'm almost at the stage now where I have a teleprompter, which I haven't used yet, but I have a teleprompter, which I'll have the view of the camera going to the teleprompter. So when they walk up, they'll be able to fix themselves.
Yeah.
And then if they're like, I see. So that's 2024. My next step is to have a teleprompter so they can see themselves because everybody is used to taking a selfie.
Yeah.
And,
that's true.
Yeah. But I still be able to, if I have to do a little directing, but what happens is you have a mirror or something and they fix themselves, they might unfix themselves. But if they have a teleprompter is a box that has a glass.
Yeah. It's like a see-through mirror. Yeah.
So basically newscasters, they usually look at words to be able to talk, which I'm assuming you've done that before.
Yes.
But can you imagine if you're having your headshot done and I see that.
Yeah.
And then they're almost doing the selfie, and it's like a very expensive selfie, but everybody's used to it now.
Yeah.
That's my next step.
That's a good idea.
I know.
I might try it.
It's really good.
I might steal it, yeah.
It's everybody's.
Yeah.
But since Nikon came out with the mirrorless camera, I think it was a Z7, Z6, I'm like, why am I going to use flash? That's stupid. Yeah. So once those came out, how many years ago now? Like 5 or 6, 7?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, I've been... And people will look at me like, where's the flash? Even when I go to trade shows and I have the constant lighting and there's like a whole different world. Now, the cool part is now, as you know, that I'm doing the videos at trade shows and they're used to the constant light. They've always had constant light because that's what movies are. And the cameras can have the cool thing. One of the things I was talking with the Sony people was, Sony's the only company that can have a very inexpensive camera. Let's say there's whatever, 6700, whatever the cheapest one is, all the way up to a Venice 2.
Yeah.
No other camera company has that, do they? So if you were within the Sony world, you can have a little point and shoot and you can grow all the way up to a Venice 2 and be Steven Spielberg.
Yeah.
Is that weird? I thought about that like the past couple of days because other companies, you know, Canon, Nikon, Sony, Panasonic, all cameras now, everybody's happy because there's no really bad camera.
No.
Technically, right?
No.
So every camera, Sony, Canon, Nikon, Fuji, everybody has great cameras.
Yes.
The only thing that difference is some use face detection, which is Panasonic, which they do pretty cool now with the Nikon was before it was known for the autofocus. Then they have eye track focusing. It's like right now is we were at a whole different level, as you know, of people being able to create content, video content.
Yeah, yeah.
And the thing that people are doing now, as you know, transitioning from stills to video.
So that, and with more or less every camera, you get both amazing stills and video as well. And then with the continuous lighting, you don't need two lighting setups. You can do a video, switch over to photos, and switch back to video.
Or you can do video at the same time.
Exactly, yeah.
What happened was I would get hired to be a show pony at a trade show. A show pony is somebody that's demonstrating something.
Yeah.
I call it show pony.
Show pony.
I know. You know the show pony? So, and then what happened was I would demonstrate stuff, and they're like, social media started coming out. Oh, do you have any behind the scenes?
Yeah.
So what happened was I got a GoPro, put on time lapse, and since I'm using constant lighting, tip of the day, if you have a GoPro and you want to do behind the scenes, lowered exposure by half a stop to one stop,
mm-hmm.
because it would be the light person would be overexposed. Yeah. I had to learn that the hard way.
Yeah.
So I would do a GoPro time lapse behind the scenes. Hey, can you do some video?
Yeah.
So then I would bring a video camera with me. Would be nice if we can hear what you're talking about. So I would have audio, which I didn't know anything about audio. Audio is huge. Rodecaster.
Yes.
And then can you do any different angles? Can we see you instead of just a person? So by the time I got done before COVID, I was at a conference, WPPI in Las Vegas. I had one camera over there for video, one camera here for video, a camera over here for video, and then I would have Atomos Ninjas on each one, and they used to have these little contraptions in the back. So at my camera, let's say I had an interesting subject that would be neat, because everybody's amazing, but mm-hmm. sometimes you want to get something for your portfolio or for social media. So I would hit record on my Atomos Ninja, and all the cameras would start recording, because it's cool. A little transmitter.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I didn't have to go to each camera.
That's cool.
So if I had...
And they sync up as well then. It's like the first frame on each one is the same.
But then what you do is once you start doing this more and more, you say, oh, I wish there was a way to sync everything, time code.
Yeah, exactly.
So each one of my cameras has a time code, technical sync.
Yeah.
Even the audio, as I saw downstairs, you have the sound devices. I have a Mixpre 3.
Yeah, yeah.
So now I have a Sony FX6 with a Mixpre 3, Shogun Ultra. I have two cameras on the sides. FX3, FX30, Ninjas, Ultra. And then when I go to a trade show, if I'm interviewing you, as soon as I hit record, that Shogun now sets off the other cameras.
Yeah.
So I don't have to touch them. And they're all time-coded. So that's, and then tomorrow's 9-hour workshop, I'll have Ninjas. And then there's a thing called the zone system, which was Ansel Adams, 18% gray, and then you work your way. So now I have a Atomos that has a thing called EL zone. Were you there for that?
No.
Okay.
No.
So EL zone is the zone system where there's a cinematographer, world-famous cinematographer, who said, why are we doing this false color stuff that every camera company has something different? So one can be blue is 18%, whatever. So he said, let's just do like the zone system. So 18% gray, and then green and yellow is half stop. So basically today, I was showing people from that I don't need a meter. I can show you that 18% gray over here and then green, because I have a 2-to-1 ratio, live on my little monitor.
Yeah.
So I was doing that today.
Yeah.
And I'll do more of that tomorrow. So
that's a lot of gear to bring it to every show, though.
Yeah, I fly with it.
Yeah.
If you fall...
That's a nightmare, though, isn't it?
No.
No?
If you have the Instagram pop up, everything's under my name.
Yeah.
My YouTube channel's my name. My website's my name. Instagram's my name. I got lucky. So I fly with all this.
Yeah.
I have 700 pounds of stuff. I have my media badge.
Yeah.
So, well, the thing is, you like using the Rodecaster, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And if you were to go smaller, you would do the dual, right? The
dual,
smaller.
Yeah.
But you're used to that, right?
Yes.
You're used to these podcast mics.
Yeah.
So if you were to do a mobile podcast, would you want to use this stuff?
Yeah, but it would change out this tripod, for example, to something a bit lighter.
Yeah.
But it's like trial and error, like you try and error. And it's like I've shown up to the airport where my bag was like way over the limit, and then you have to pay per pound or kilo.
Kilo,
or whatever. Yeah. So after a while, you sort of like get to know your gear a bit more, and then for like, okay, what can I live without? But I was showing up where it's like, I have to hold it. But usually I let the other people have the tripods or the mic stands, for example, and then I hold mine because I'm more certain.
You know, you're not making noise.
Yeah, I got the headset, and I'm more certain that I can hold it still instead of them. And what people sometimes do is that they just drop it after a while because they have to hold it up to their face, but then they sort of like let their hand go.
Inconsistent.
Yeah, and then you have to adjust and stuff.
And they make one for the tabletop, and if you have the little arm.
Yeah.
And then you would use the dual. So it's the same as that, but smaller.
A bit smaller, yeah.
But you have to stay within the weight limit.
Yeah.
So in the U.S., if you have a press pass, you can do up to 99.9 pounds.
Really?
You pay one fee.
Wow.
So one case is 99.9 because I have a rolling stand.
Yeah.
So I have a stand with some grip stuff, 99.9 pounds. And then with the press pass, all my suitcases would be 99.9. So I have two other suitcases, about 80 pounds. And then my carry-on, they don't weigh the carry-ons in USA.
I'm jealous.
Yes. They do that in Norway, right? Because I used to fly Norwegian.
I have to weigh it all the time.
So last time I was here, that little roller case I had was about 70 pounds.
Yeah.
And I made it through all my trip for 5.5 weeks.
Yeah.
And it was when I was flying home, Norwegian.
Yeah.
Oh, weigh your bag.
Yeah.
And they're like, 70 pounds. I had to pay a lot of money, but I made it through 5.5 weeks.
That's not bad.
Finland, Norway, Sweden, Denmark.
There's a lot of tricks that you have to get accustomed to. It's like when you see that they actually control and check, because they do it when the flight is like fully booked. That's when they start weighing it and to make sure that everyone pays and everything.
But you know what you can buy?
What?
A Domke, D-O-M-K-E vest, photography vest.
Yeah.
And a couple of years ago, I bought that before I came here because I was a nervous wreck.
Yeah.
Sorry. I was a nervous wreck. So I went to the local camera store and I said, do you have a black? And they just came out with the black ones in December. So I have a black Domke that I had fully loaded. So some airlines, Norwegian airlines, they would weigh your bags at check-in.
Yeah.
So what you do is you load up your vest at check-in.
Yeah.
Now, sometimes they do it at the gate, which they do here in Norway.
Sometimes.
So they can't, as a photographer, videographer, your equipment's not going to be left to your side.
No.
You know, you can't check it in. Luckily, with the domestic flights, the small airline, they give you, which I learned on the way here, we flew into Copenhagen and then here, they were like trying to give me a tag for my expensive stuff, but I didn't realize you can bring the bag to the plane and they put on the plane. You see them put on the plane. And when the plane arrives, they take the bag out. So it's not being, because there's a lot of thefts.
Yeah.
In New York, never, tip of the day, do not fly to New York City.
Ever.
Because they will steal your stuff.
Really?
Consistently. And they don't do anything about it. Wow. If you were to fly to the East Coast with stuff in your bags, we have friends that had all of their Christmas gifts stolen.
Really?
When they were going to out of country. It's a known issue.
Wow.
Do not have anything of value in your check-in. Tip of the day at the podcast. So Boston and, you know. So when you do video and photography, video, as you know, is you have a lot more stuff.
Tons, yeah.
So I still had a little bit of, but when I travel for my trade show interviews, I developed a rolling interview stand, which if you want to have pop up in the podcast, I can send it to you.
Yeah.
But it's a rolling all-in-one YouTube studio that I have four cameras. Now, the main camera is on you. And if we're talking about that Rodecaster dual, Rodecaster whatever it is, and this plant, I can put a camera on this Noga arm on that. I can put it on this. And if you have, let's say there's something interesting in front, like say a bunch of lenses, I also have a slider.
That's cool.
So what happens is I have Sony, right? Yes. So I use the Sony wireless because I got to interview the Sony audio expert in Toronto. And then I said, could we use that Sony for your interview? He goes, yes. So when I was editing it, I'm like, this sounds amazing.
Yeah.
So I actually bought that Sony wireless that goes right into the hot shoe. It's the UWP. So digital in, right to the hot shoe. So that's the cut. So when I go to a trade show, I'm actually an attendee with benefits. That's why I tell people laugh. Because I'm in the trade show, and I have to get in the trade show before it opens. So I normally get myself into, let's say, the Sony booth or the Nanlite booth or, you know, other booths, because I have to get in there. I have to show up to the show a couple of days early. So this is part of my thing is what's called a producer. I have to get myself into a trade show booth. So this would be shown in Norway. I don't want to get my trade things. Nobody else does this. So I'm in a trade show booth, and I set up my rolling stand, get all ready to go. And then if the higher in the booth, like Sony has security. So at the last show in New York, I was able to leave all my stuff in their booth because they had security. Yeah. I take out the cards to download, but I didn't have to worry about taking my cameras.
That's nice.
But in other shows, I would leave all the non-camera stuff and then pack it up and get to the show 2 hours early. And then set it back up. Same and then way. I'm in the trade show before it opens. And then I'm rolling around the trade show with, you'll see it. You haven't seen it, have you?
I think I have, yeah.
Well, the first couple of shows, like, what the heck? Nobody, but now it's my signature now. Yeah. Is that when they see me showing up, it's number one, I never did trade show interviews before. Mm-hmm. So I'm going in, like, never done this before. I have this rolling stand, like, they thought I was on national TV or something. And now my small little YouTube channel that it's still small, but I've passed over, I'm at, I think, 1,100 now.
Yeah.
And 2023 is my first year. So I went from zero to 1,100. And now are you going to NAB? Yeah. Are you going to this? Because I love trade shows. I love camera stores. So I came here a couple of days ago. My wife is sitting over there. And I'm like, well, it's like if you did woodworking.
Yeah.
Anything like you're doing the bicycling, the
triathlon,
So now you have to learn about bicycles.
Yeah.
You have to learn about being aerodynamic.
Yeah.
You're doing
all the stuff.
Yeah. You're doing time trial. That's what.
Yeah. Swimming, the technique, running shoes, triathlon bikes. If you go to an Ironman, it's like heaven if you're interested in it. Like, you can just talk for days.
And they also have vendors there that...
Everyone's there. Yeah, it's like a festival more than anything else. It's really fun. If you're into it, it's really fun. But if you're not into it, you can't wait to get out of there.
Yeah, but what's cool is you're like a wedding photographer.
Yeah.
So you have to swim, run, and then bike, right? Or is it...
It's swim, bike, run.
Run.
Yes.
Yeah, and you have to be... You know, your strength is, what is your strength?
Swim is my strongest one.
That's the hardest one too.
For some people, yeah, but I surf a lot, so it's it's in my nature.
So you're in the top percentage when you get out of the water?
I'm okay when I get out of the water, and then everyone overtakes me on the bike.
So right now, the weakest link you have is the bike?
Yes.
And why do you think that is?
Never done it before.
Okay.
I was completely new to it.
And you do running pretty good, right?
Yeah, running is okay.
But you don't have fast twitch muscles, right? You can do long distance.
Yeah, I'm okay with long distance.
So the bicycle, you have to, it's a different mindset.
Yeah.
So in the bike world, I used to do biking.
Okay.
You had Lance Armstrong.
Yeah.
Don't worry about the drugs, but he learned from the runners that they would do the fast pace.
Yeah.
So Lance Armstrong was one of the first bicyclists. Then you would have Jules, the guy from Germany. He was a famous bike. So it was Jans, I can't remember his name. So you had two styles of biking. You had the Kenya runners that run on the front of the feet, fast pace.
Yeah.
You know about those, right?
Yes.
Okay, good. Then you have the heel strikers.
Yeah.
The long strides. But the Kenyas, Lance Armstrong goes, So you have to have a better cardio the faster you go. So he had really good, for whatever reason, he had really good, wasn't the
VO2 max.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even though the drugs enhanced it.
Yeah.
But you still have to, you could.
The baseline is still there. Yeah.
So he had good cardio lungs, fast pace.
Yeah.
So he did fast pedaling. While the other guy, he was a famous German.
Right.
He was about big gear. He had massive legs and he was you know, so that's a different. So the way you're a runner, are you a heel striker or a front foot?
More on the heel, but I'm trying to like get better on the cadence. Yeah, the quicker and then once, strides.
And then the bicycle, are you fast cadence or slow cadence? Are you big gears or small gears?
More small. Yeah.
So you
try to. Yeah.
So your quads.
Yeah.
Your,
big quads, big shins.
Yeah. Yeah. So they switched it. He went. How's your?
It's okay. Yeah. Yeah.
You have good.
VO2 max.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty good.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
As a little side note.
Yes.
Well, you know what's cool? Everything that we do, it's similar to everything else. If you were to do a trade show and you get to stay there a couple days later, and you get to stay, once the trade show's over, it ends at 1600. At 1600, those guys are tearing it down.
Yeah.
And then you see the stuff coming up.
Yeah.
So photography, woodworking, industrial, contractors, everything's the same. I got to do headshots for veterinarians.
Yeah.
And I'm walking through there like, everything's the same.
Yeah.
Now, the cool part of veterinarians, there's no other photographers there. So when I had my headshot booth, it was like, they were all excited.
They were all curious,
but when I go to photography shows, it's like one of a thousand.
But it's interesting because you said that in terms of if you have another job or another hobby or another interest, it always prepares you for what's next in your life, right? So you always qualify yourself and prepare yourself for a job that doesn't exist yet. That's what I keep saying as well. Like I had that too. It's like I got this job because I did stuff on the side before I got this job that qualified me for the job. So it's not like you learn the skill. There's like, oh, I want that job over there. So I learned a skill. You learn a skill, the job appears, and then you're lucky because you're prepared to to seize the job and take it.
Yeah.
Right? So you take all the things that you learn from your previous life and adapt it to photography, for example, like
right.
you said.
And if you do a job that's paying the bills, health, you know, in USA, you guys have universal health care.
Yeah.
So you do the job that puts the food on the table. And now some people, so for an example, there's a guy on YouTube. He was a school teacher that taught audiovisual.
Right.
You know, he has a really colorful background.
Okay.
So he has a YouTube channel. I'm drawing a blank. So his YouTube channel is about podcasts. His wife's a podcast. She has her own channel. So he has a very colorful channel. And when he first started, it was a side hustle because he taught audiovisual at a high school or a school. And then he built up his followers, and then I'm not gonna say stupidly, but stopped the high school job, and now no insurance or anything. But he's doing what he loves to do because he taught students how to do audiovisual. Him and his wife did podcasting, and he taught podcasting on YouTube, and then he was able to stop the job that he probably didn't dislike, but he loves doing the podcasting.
Yeah.
So that's a good example. Or, you know, the video, YouTube is huge. You guys have been doing YouTube for not a lot of years, but with this podcast station, you put out podcasts once a week, minimally, right?
Yes, once a week, yeah.
This is more like a vlog. This is called a vlog, right?
Yeah, it's like a video podcast, yeah.
Yeah. I always thought it was interesting. I'm trying to watch. Why not? You know who Howard Stern is?
Yeah.
Yeah. Howard Stern used to be only on the radio.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when he does his radio, he's also doing a vlog podcast, the same exact show.
Yeah.
And now it's on YouTube. So he has his radio show, which is basically the same time as his podcast.
Yeah.
And you guys are doing the same thing, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Upload clips and stuff from it. That's the only way that I know about Howard Stern is from YouTube.
Yeah. And back in the day, he was only in New York. He was on some AM channel.
Yeah. Yeah. He was quite hardcore back in the day.
Oh, yeah. He would get fired. Well, he did it with the Sirius, whatever it's called, and he can do whatever he wants. But the problem is once there's no consequence.
Yeah. It's not fun.
But he was a pioneer because he had him and some other people. But to be able to do photography and with the cameras now, you have to learn video.
Yeah.
And how you can learn it is on YouTube.
Exactly.
I never built a computer before. I was always a Mac. So I went on YouTube and I built my first PC. To me, YouTube is the new Google.
Yeah.
I don't even Google anymore, even though Google owns YouTube. Yeah. Everything I know, I didn't know anything about audio. I didn't know anything about editing. I was a still photographer.
Yeah.
So when COVID hit and the photography was off a little bit.
We did a telecast. I remember that, yeah.
Yeah. But it was good when we did the test.
Yeah. But everyone had to figure it out then, didn't they?
Yeah.
They were forced to.
Yeah, because you guys wanted me to come here in person, but we had COVID.
Of course.
I got lucky that Karen and you.
Yeah.
So let's do it.
We did it all digital.
But when we did the test, visuals looked great.
Yeah.
But I think even though COVID really is bad, and there's businesses that are not, like businesses, I'm assuming here too, no longer there.
Yeah.
But a lot of people learn about YouTube. YouTube was, that was at the height, right?
Yeah, definitely.
And then you guys started doing more podcasts.
Yeah.
Because you did some back in the day. I remember you had it in the old store.
Yeah, we had to rig it up and down all the time. We didn't have a studio. But during COVID, we were able to build a studio and then have.
So there are some, some pluses with COVID. Because you wouldn't have this.
No.
And you guys are really good with this. I wish I spoke Norwegian.
Yeah, that's good.
But no, you guys have a great...
It's like there's so many things that came out of it, like in terms of digital tools, right? It's like with webinars and stuff like that. Like all meetings more or less are on Zoom now. And I love it. You don't have to like travel around that much.
Even doctor's appointments.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah.
And then with lighting, with continuous light being inexpensive,
people
realizing you shouldn't really have your monitor down here. Yeah. And why are you so, they add a little, everybody's now almost like a vlogger now.
Yeah.
When they're doing these Zoom calls.
You just got to figure it out, yeah.
Yeah.
He's forced to it, yeah.
Yeah.
Even my mom got into it as well. Like, she's like completely amateur when it comes to all digital stuff, but she was just like, I just have to figure it out.
Well, how awesome is that? Did she ask for help?
No, but then people started asking her for help, which was like very cool.
Was your mom happy?
Yeah, yeah. She was proud. She was very proud. We have to wrap it up quickly, but any tips for people who want to get into portrait photography quickly?
Well, everybody has a camera.
Yeah.
Everybody takes a selfie. If you can, and everybody thinks they know the best side. And then if you pay attention, and the biggest tip I can give is constant light is great. What you see is what you get.
Yeah.
Everybody takes selfies with constant light because you really, you pop a flash. But most people look for the window light, right?
Yeah.
What light? You ever see people do this? Oh, okay. That's what constant light is, right?
Yeah.
Biggest thing is if you remove distractions that take you away from the face and eyes.
Yeah.
If you see something, don't be afraid to say, can you just, and then think about. You don't need to be up here. I everybody to have a confident, positive. I don't photograph people from above because it looks, no matter what height somebody is, I go to them.
Yeah.
My camera goes to them.
Eye level.
And just think about the light. Try to have a nice flat light. You have a window, face the window and that face the other direction, which you've seen people do that. Nowadays with constant, with the cameras and phones, you just have to worry about lighting.
Yeah.
And if it looks good in the camera, it's going to look good as you take the picture.
Lighting is everything.
Lighting is everything.
Light is life.
Look at you.
Good man. Thank you so much for coming
Thank
in
you,
and
Thomas.
Taking the time.
Oh,
I hope you enjoy Norway.
I love
the
Norway.
Weather is okay now. It's been terrible for the past 6 months.
I'm looking forward to cold. I bought my Dolly shirt.
Yeah.
And it was too hot. I can't wear it.
Yeah.
So I want cold.
Spring is in the air now. So
I know.
You're a bit
I missed it by a few months.
All right. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you, Thomas.